We ask no more questions that others don't dare. We're dead on the air. We're dead on the air.
Welcome to Dads on the Air for the 14th of July 2009. Should be an interesting show. We've got Jeff Kennett, former Victorian Premier, up first. He'll be talking about depression, suicide, and general sort of health issues to do with men. We have in the studio, after a long absence, Jermaine Jairia.
I'm back in good form, darling. I had the swine flu, don't you know? And I got really offended when I went to the hospital and they called me a pig. Can't imagine why.
So we're very pleased to have her back. And Ian Purdy has returned from Vietnam.
Yes, I have. And it's I would love to be able to say it's wonderful to be back, but I'm not enjoying the climate, I must say. Let's leave it at that.
Overly controlled.
Well, yes, over-regulated, overpriced, this country that we all live in. It's a damn shame.
Damn shame. Don't forget, you can listen to this program at our website, www.dadsontheair.net, which has been beautifully redesigned in recent years by the wonderful work of Greg Andreessen and is about to be relaunched again with even more bells and whistles. That's www.dadsontheair.net. You can also listen via the miracles of live streaming on the 2GLF website, 893fm.com.au. First up, a few news items. There's a story in The Age, Shared Care of Children Reviewed, controversial family law requirements that considers giving children equal time with both parents will be reviewed, according to Stephanie Peating, critics of the current law, and we're not hearing any of the defenders at all in the recent media palaver over it. Critics of the current law say it is a creation of creating a generation of ping-pong children who have to shuttle between both parents. Quote, high conflict parents should not have shared care because the children end up going back and forth, the chairman of the Family Law Council, John Wade, said. Now, John Wade has refused to come on our program. He's paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and cannot be bothered talking to the mere plebs out here. So I just think that's absolutely disgraceful that this man has ignored our request to come on the program, and certainly shows that he's not prepared to debate these issues on open ground. The Howard government has introduced changes to the Family Law Act in 2006, which required the family court to consider shared care where it is deemed to be in the children's best interests. The changes include requiring a resident parent, usually the mother, to make sure children had a meaningful relationship with the non-resident parent. And we've long argued here that there shouldn't be winners and losers out of all this, and the obvious solution is cooperative care after divorce. But all the John Wades of the world are far too clever to accept a common sense solution such as this. The changes saw a near doubling of the number of families with equal or near equal time arrangements, and of all new cases registered with the despised, well, that's our word, but with the Child Support Agency in the year to June 17, 17% were shared or near equal time arrangements. In the year to June 2003, only 9% were in that category. So there's been a significant increase in cooperative care of children after divorce. And unfortunately, this government looks like it's about to wind it all back to the Dark Ages. Talking of the Dark Ages, how's this for totalitarianism?
Yeah, Sunday Telegraph, Linda Silmalis wrote under the heading Spies to Target Cheating Parents. She writes, deadbeat parents who avoid paying child support will be spied on by private investigators under a move being considered by the federal government. Now, this is not what she's written, but this is just more of the same, you know, beat up the victims crap. You know, deadbeat parents. I mean, that terminology is offensive. I mean, there's a lot of people out there suffering intense financial strain at the moment, especially separated parents of both sexes. And this paying private investigators to spy on them is disgusting. It's an absolute breach of all of their human rights. It's pathetic. Why don't they just take the money and give it to the children? Why waste it on a bunch of professional snoops who are going to cause no end of trouble for everybody? This is not a solution. This is just stupidity.
I totally agree. I had a private dick once, and it was less than satisfactory, I can tell you.
Thank you, Jermaine. Now, also, in this morning's Daily Telegraph, Byron Kay, under the heading Sleeping Man Axed to Death. This is a fairly classic case here. A mother yesterday admitted to killing her ex-partner with a tomahawk as he lay sleeping in bed, but denied it was murder. The Maitland woman instead pleaded guilty to manslaughter as a court heard she was suffering from delusions that her victim had tortured their young son years earlier.
Well, he was a man and he needed to be slaughtered. What's wrong with that?
Manslaughter. Well, exactly. Apparently, the boy, according to her, the boy was forced to eat his own vomit and she put him in boiling water. But Mr. Maxwell and psychiatrist, Mr. Maxwell, her defense lawyer, and psychiatrist believe the woman was suffering delusions. He is quoted as saying, "These were matters that were not based in reality and did not in fact happen," he said. But she wanted to protect her son from future abuse. So this woman is basically a liar. She's made up all of this drivel. She's murdered her husband and with a tomahawk while he was asleep, her ex-husband. This is disgraceful. She should be locked up and the key should be thrown away as an example to other would-be murderers with tomahawks.
Well, there you go. Jermaine, what do you reckon about it all?
Well, I think she's a bit barking mad myself. But I'm not really an expert on the subject.
Well, you are an expert on the barking mad, Jermaine. I mean, you know, you've written books and books and books of barking mad drivel, so...
Oh, this is outrageous. First I go to the hospital, they accuse me of being a pig, and now you're accusing me of being a dog. Make up your mind.
Well, there are a couple of stories there. Rather sad ones, really, aren't they?
Yes, well.
Do you do sad these days? No.
I am sad, darling.
Right.
Okay. Pray tell, off you go.
That we're all going to get a view. Come on, spit it out, Jermaine.
Spit it out.
Come on, your airfare from bloody London for nothing.
Would you rather me read them a new comment?
Do your job.
That's probably a better idea, darling. I don't think I can take this one. No sustained willpower here, darling.
Okay, this is from the Herald Sun.
I keep fading away.
Father banned from talking about son's body problems. Full weight of the law. This court has banned a Victorian father from weighing his son. The family court orders also prevent the dad, and we're going to do a story in the coming weeks on a dad who's also been jailed for sending a birthday card to his kid, so it's just astonishing some of this. The family court orders also prevent the dad discussing the 9-year-old's weight with or within earshot of the boy. The man could face sanctions, including fines or jail, if he breaches the order and a series of others set by the judges. In the midst of a, it's a farce, but it's furphy, but we're meant to be in the midst of a obesity epidemic. Justice Nathan Mushen imposed the restrictions at the end of a bitter 16-day custody hearing where the child's health was a major flashpoint. The court heard the dad is fixated on the fact his disabled son's weight exceeds 40 kilograms and he blames his ex-wife for the blow. How would you know if any of this was true once all the experts and the lawyers get in there? I mean, it's not called a palace of lies for nothing.
And who paid for it? 16 days in the family court would have cost somebody an absolute fortune.
Came out of my tax money, darling. Do you remind me of that noxious body parts, that private dick that reminds me about something I couldn't weigh once with no weight to it at all?
No weight to it at all. So the father, who can't be named for legal reasons, of course, the usual secrecy of...
Well, you can name me for legal reasons, but you can't name the father, I see.
Has accused the mother of allowing the boy to watch too much television, eat fatty foods, and exercise little. He was concerned the child's weight was having an impact on the effectiveness of various medications, and the boy suffers from a range of medical problems. The mother accused the man of denigrating the boy about his weight and of using his size as a reason to criticise her.
Well, one would think those
classic example of why an adversarial system in family law is an absolute disaster. You've got these two parents accusing one or the other. Why can't someone just sit down with both of them, bang their heads together, and they look after the kid together? Why not?
Well, disabled kid. That is sensible, John. Sensible. We're talking about the family court here, you know. Family law is
don't
not
expect
sensible.
A sensible comment from me, darlings.
And of course, the man has been accused of aggressive behaviour.
He's aggressive.
I mean, who would you know? How would you know?
Well, darling, if you don't ask me, I would just say that the man is a man and therefore he's aggressive. He's a beast.
He deserves to be slaughtered with a tomahawk in his bed.
Oh, that's a bit harsh, huh?
Well, he's a man. He needs to be slaughtered. I said it once, I'll say it again.
Right. Well, we're going to take a short musical break. We'll just do one more quick... No, we'll come back. We'll do a short musical break and we'll come back. We'll be talking with Jeff Kennett, former Victorian Premier. We'll be back.
Why does my heart feel so bad? Why does my soul
Line, Geoffrey Kennett, former Victorian Premier and now spokesman for Beyond Blue. Are you there, Jeff?
Yes, I am, John. Good morning to you.
No, look, thank you very much for coming on to Dad's on the Air. Are you still chair of Beyond Blue?
Yes, I am.
Right, but you're moving on from that role shortly, I reckon.
No.
No, that's okay.
I'll be going at the end of 2011. If you call that short, that's short.
No. Well, look, can you just give us the background, really, of how you got involved with this? I gather it was the suicide of a couple of young men who were friends of your daughter that originally got you involved in the whole
issue. Yes, that's correct. In 1997, two young men took their lives separately, unrelated, and my daughter came to me, understandably very upset, at two of her friends leaving the planet, and she said to me, challenged me, Dad, what can you do to reduce the road toll? And I thought she was talking about just that, reducing the road toll, but when we found out more about these deaths, we found that unfortunately they're both suicides, and therefore that changed our emphasis a fair bit.
And of course men do suicide at a much higher rate than women. What, what's been the process of your discovery around the issue?
Well, I guess the first point to make is over the last few years, suicide rates in Australia have dropped considerably from over 2,700 now down to about 1,700. But even then, the statistics are not fully reliable. But they're the best thing we've got to go on.
Is that a change in the method of counting or a genuine drop?
No, a genuine drop, but the inconsistencies there the whole time are often when mainly men, as you say, take their lives and use a vehicle, they're recorded as a car accident, a road fatality, as opposed to suicide, and we never know quite for sure what the reason was. So there is always some doubt, but there has been a genuine drop. You're right, more men do take their lives than women. More women attempt suicide but use pills and other forms and invariably get found or report their illness and have their stomachs pumped out or their wrists bandaged up and they get a second chance of life that they grab. Men, on the other hand, use methods for which there is no second chance, and by that I mean a motor vehicle, a noose or a firearm.
Or even drowning. The statistics show the highest band of drowning is the divorce age group.
Yes, it's an interesting statistic, drowning. It's not as instantaneous as the other three that I mentioned, so it is unusual. But, look, you know, we try and focus on prevention and we try and build people's skills to the stage that they're better positioned. But we're always going to have suicides, unfortunately, and unless you're with a person within that final 30 seconds, you're not likely as though you're going to have much impact, because in many cases, they're not, the individuals are not clinically depressed. They might be emotionally depressed. And it's often just a thought of the moment. For others, it is a considered thought.
I've heard that the decision to kill themselves is really quite an arbitrary or spontaneous decision. And
yeah, it comes, different people approach it differently. I mean, I've known of many people who have prepared for their death and have written letters to loved ones and business colleagues and others. On the other hand, I've run into many people who have attempted to take their lives and survived. Some who are today quadriplegics, who say, thank God they never took their life, even though they're now substantially inconvenienced.
As a result of their
suicide attempt. And several have written books, some of which I've launched. So there are, you know, major views. I think what we've got to do is just build up the value strengths of individuals in our society and to try and reduce the risk of these things taking place.
So is it simply untreated depression or...
No. No, in many cases it is years of illness for a whole range of reasons. For others it may be a lot of people after they've had a major operation, a major scare, become concerned about the fragility of their life and end it. For many others, though, it's emotional depression. You know, it's a loss of a job. It can be the breaking up of a relationship. These aren't necessarily clinical depression.
The loss of children in divorces.
Yes, all of that. Common. Well, for men, of course, it's very hard for a lot of men. And the evidence shows that where a couple are going to break up, often the women have prepared for it better than the men.
Oh, yes, most certainly.
In many cases, the men don't know about it until the wife says it's the end of the road. So they've been preparing for some months or years.
Chatting to the girlfriends and networking furiously.
And it's all over and, of course, not taking their husband into their confidence. And then the male finds it's all over. Now, I'm not to say it doesn't happen the other way as well, but it, overwhelmingly, men handle emotional stress less well than women.
And why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think we tend to think that we're the tough ones of the genders, that we're born to be stronger than John Wayne, but we're a fairly fragile packet.
Yeah.
Well, so it's denial more than anything else.
Right. And because women often sort of talk about emotional things, whereas the blokes just couldn't think of anything worse, basically.
Well, we don't tend to talk about financial difficulties. We don't seem to talk about relationship difficulties. We don't seem to talk about health issues as well as women do. So, but it's changing, but it's...
Do you think it will ever change?
Oh, yeah, no, it is changing. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I travel the country very, very widely, and a lot of the times in rural and regional Australia, and men are out there talking publicly about their experiences, and that's all very good. So yes, it's changing, but we've still got a lot of those, perhaps the majority, to whom the stigma still applies.
That they really won't talk about anything personal.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Won't seek help.
No.
And you know, there's no difference from depression from any other illness.
And that, of course, is another thing which is slowly changing, isn't it? That whole perception of depression.
Yes, and I think it's changing at a fairly fast rate. I mean, we've now got a public priority for depression and mental illness. We now have a political priority. You didn't have that 10 years ago.
And I think, as you've written before, or you've spoken before, it's bipartisan that you've actually, you know, as a former Liberal Premier, actually had a strong support from the Rudd government.
Yes, but not only the Rudd government. I've had it from all Premiers, regardless of their political persuasion, right around the country. It's without a doubt the most valuable piece of work I've done in my life to date. And it's perhaps the most important because it is so bipartisan.
So what do these programs designed to decrease suicide rates and improve the situations, what do they actually look like?
Well, there's a whole range. We have workplace programs where we actually go out and educate either a whole workplace over a seminar session or a series of sessions, depending on the availability of time, or we go into a workplace and we educate trainers within the workplace, who then go deeper into the bowels of the organisation and pass on the information. We have books, we have helplines, we have an endless amount of fact sheets. Our website is the most complete you'll find, but easy to read. We've got programs for the young, we have programs for the old. We've got programs aimed at men, at children, at women, of course. So we're continually developing an array of weaponry so that we never become complacent. At the moment, we're in the middle of a mail out to every household in Australia.
And what's that about?
That's about depression, the symptoms of depression, giving people a fridge magnet of, you know, the number of our helpline, the email address of our website. So people in the privacy of their own home can ring for help or advice, or can actually get access to advice on their computer.
And basically, what is the main advice? You know, if you're living with a bloke that, you know, if you're a woman listening to the program, for instance, and your bloke is, you think he's acting very depressed, what do they do?
Get professional help.
That's the
problem. Try and get to see a doctor.
Right.
Most important thing. And depending on the scale of the illness, the GP may refer you to a more qualified person, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, a clinical nurse. But, you know, if you break your arm, you normally go and see a doctor. If you've got depression, you should normally go and see a doctor. I mean, that's... People have tended not to do that.
No, it's seen as a sign of weakness.
Look down on others who are ill, but the reality is we shouldn't.
There's also a perception that people, if you go to the doctor, that you're going to get prescribed some kind of antidepressant drug, which a lot of people are not interested in putting themselves on drugs to deal with.
No, and that will be a matter for the GP to decide or advise, and the severity of the illness, as you would have be able to appreciate, John, but often a drug is there simply to break the cycle, and that's necessary. If you've got a more serious form of mental illness, bipolar, schizophrenia, you'll need drugs for the rest of your life. But that doesn't mean that you can't live a very full life. And there are many in our society who I know in commerce and politics and the arts who suffer a major mental illness, but who live an absolutely full and professional life and who are public names.
And they've got this sort of... Well, is it a secret? Well, Michael Costa, I suppose, is the most famous example in New South Wales here.
Yeah.
He's been very open about a range of medications that he's on. And
yep.
He's pretty high functioning, fairly clearly. judging by his columns anyway.
Yes, no, no. And, I mean, I think that's all good. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, we've got former footballers who have declared that they've been ill, and or current footballers who suffer depression who are still playing at the peak of their profession. We have netballers, we have politicians. You know, it's just an illness, mate.
And is there a cause? Does it have a cause, or?
Well, I think it's if we knew what the simple cause was, someone would be a very rich man or woman. But no, we don't have a cause. But it's normally, it can often be generic. It can hit a person overnight. I mean, I've never had clinical depression, but I'm never so confident that I won't. Mm. And therefore, it makes me a lot more understanding of the illness generally.
But most illnesses we tend to associate with some kind of infection, like the swine flu.
Yep.
There's some kind of germ going around that things are contagious. I mean,
yes, it's not the case with depression.
But if you live with a depressed person, is it possible that you could catch depression from living in a depressed environment?
I guess the technical answer is certainly no. The non-technical answer would be, and it's happened to many, particularly women who are looking after a male who is depressed, a husband, a son, who refuse to seek treatment, they become very demanding on their partner, their mother, their sister, their wife, often to the point that the woman gives up a lot of her normal activities. And in doing that, she runs the risk of becoming ill because she is so focused on the demands of her partner or son that she puts her own health well down her priority list. And I keep saying to people, the most important thing you can do in life is look after and maintain your own health. You can't look after a sick person as well as you can if you're healthy. So don't allow those who are ill to become a burden around your neck unnecessarily. Maintain your own independence, maintain your own activities and your own health. Otherwise, that's where you can get.
And you won't be able to help anyone.
That's exactly right.
Now, look, Dads on the Air began with a group of separated blokes quite some years ago now, and they do show up very highly in the statistics, you know, in the suicide stats and so on. Did you form any specific views about separated men and these areas?
Yes, and we've actually put out a book, or we've done it, I may be wrong. It may be that Beyond Blue, I wish I'd remembered, I'd have it here in front of me, but I'm not at Beyond Blue at the moment. We have this publication, I think, that's been written by separated men, which we're hoping to fund, that we're putting out, because the incident levels of depression, of suicide, is so high among that group of our community, and because the work that's been done by some groups are so good, we believe it's important to have that information disseminated as widely as possible. So we've been prepared to fund the publication of that information and make it freely available, because I think, to be quite honest, whether it's separated men, whether it's any other men's organisation, because depression is so prevalent and because suicide rates are so high, it falls under our umbrella as well, and that's why we're prepared to add and assist financially.
Right. And you're just not clear whether that's been published yet or it's in the process of being...
No, it has been published.
Oh, it has been.
I had a copy of it. I'm searching on my desk here. I'm over back in my own office, but have a copy of it.
Anyway, if we recommend...
It is published, but it's available through Beyond Blue. Here we are. Look at this. What do you like? It's called Men and Separation, Navigating the Future. And it's put together by Relationships Australia, Men's Line and Beyond Blue, and I think Beyond Blue are paying for it.
Right.
And it's been put together by a relationship. It's a very, very good publication, and if any of your listeners would like it, then you can either give us a ring at Beyond Blue or get on our website and order it through there, and we'll send it out free of charge.
And it's just beyondblue.com. It's got .au at the end, I can't remember.
.com.au.
That's it. Now, look, what has changed that the suicide rates have come down so dramatically?
I think it's, look, you can't, ever be 100% sure, and you would only admit it with tongue-in-cheek in case they go up again tomorrow, which they always could.
Mm.
But I think there's been a huge amount of effort put into it. I mean, Beyond Blue's been going 10 years now. It's not all our work, of course, but there's been a massive increase in men's health issues. There's been a lot of work with prostate cancer. So the fact that it's out in the marketplace, that people are speaking so freely, all contributes to a better environment. And so, you know, in your area of interest, guys who are finding it difficult now have a number of places to go to. I mean, they can go to Men's Line, they can go to Relationships Australia, they can come to Beyond Blue. They're not alone. And we've published this document with funds we've raised from or been given by Movember, which is the growing of moustaches every November.
Which is also a great initiative, yeah.
It's a great initiative, yeah. And they give us money and they give money to prostate cancer. So we evaluate every request we get. And this one, which is some wonderful writing, we've seen fit to apply some of the Movember money to. And Movember gets, I mean, there are over 100,000 men who grew moustaches last year. That's the MCG full, overflowing.
Yeah.
And all their Mo sisters. So the message gets out. So how does the rate drop? Maybe just quietly something's working.
Yeah, spreading the word by the sound
of
it.
Yep.
And so men, of course, are seen more as bulls separated in their own paddocks and not as cooperative with each other as women. They just don't work together as well.
No, they don't network as well.
No, they don't. Do you think that that's changing or will ever change, or it's the nature of the beast?
I think it is changing. And again, I think things like Men's Line and Relationships Australia, separate men, these are all evidence of people coming together, trying to share their experiences. You know, men, it's a very lonely existence if you're on your own. Your ego's been knocked for six. You're often without access to the things you love most, as often as you'd like, your children. And often the shock of it, a lot of men aren't prepared for it.
No, I really notice that they often show signs of sort of obsessive compulsive disorders, you know, just shocked. They're just totally shocked.
Yeah, well, I can only imagine it, but I just hope it never happens to me. I mean, it shattered me for life.
No, you've been happily married. Felicity, isn't it, for years?
Yeah, well, no, we had a period there where it was rocky for a while, but that was because I was spending too much time in politics and not enough time around the house, and that was a wake-up call to me. So when I lost the election in 92, although I was disappointed, it wasn't the end of the world. It gave me the opportunity to, you know, reconnect a little better. And now we've got grandchildren, so that's a whole new phase of living and life.
So, look, we'll just wind up. If a bloke is... how does he recognise that he's depressed? I mean, men are often not very in touch with their own feelings and they don't know what's going on in that department, usually.
The first answer I'd give, John, is ask you to tell your listeners to have a look at our website, and that'll give you what I call the 12 or 14 ingredients, that if they any four or five exist for longer than 5 to 6 weeks would be an indication you're suffering early stages of depression. Things like change in eating habits, feeling alone, withdrawing from society, not sleeping well. There are a number of ingredients that are obvious that could indicate that you're suffering depression. If that's the case, go and get help.
So, yes, okay. And it's the same is true for people who live closely with those blokes if they notice that sort of behaviour.
And that's why this website is so good, because you can educate yourself to monitor your own mood swings, but then you are educated and you can look at your family, your parents, you can look at your workplace colleagues. And if everyone were to do it, then if you were to approach me and say, hey mate, you've been acting in a way that I don't consider your norm, you could be suffering from depression, I wouldn't be put out that you'd mentioned it to me. I'd be grateful.
Mm. Mm. And so just in this whole journey of yours through this, with this organisation and establishing this organisation, what's it done to you? How has your own perceptions of life and humans changed?
Well, I was out addressing a breakfast this morning at a football club, and I was talking about that. Mm. Because of the number of people I've met and spoken to, right around the country, three or four things. First thing is, I appreciate waking up every morning. I give thanks for waking up. It may not be in a religious sense, it might be just the expression of the words, but I take life very seriously and I don't take it for granted. So when something happens to me that causes me distress, I weigh that against the gift of life. So I lose an election, how important is that? Well, to be quite honest, it's just, you know, doesn't even rate. So it puts everything into perspective, if I can put it that way. And that was like losing your job. I was sacked.
But by the people, which is even more public.
I don't want to overdo it, but the people didn't sack me. The people elected three independents, and the three independents decided to vote with the Labor Party. But I appreciate life. Secondly, I look after my own health better, because I think at the end of the day, if you're healthy, if you're physically well, you're more likely to be mentally well, and that's an important connect.
And that's a really big one, I think, for blokes who often, particularly if they're distressed or going through a difficult period, loss of a job, loss of kids, all those things, they go straight to the pub, basically.
And take up what happens again is that they invariably go to bed and they're not tired. They are not physically exhausted, and I've helped so many men around Australia with their depressive illnesses by getting them to change their lifestyle and doing more exercise.
Right.
So when you go to bed, you are tired, you do sleep better, and you wake up fresher. If you go to bed and you're not exhausted and you've got problems on your plate that you can't deal with, you're never going to sleep. So I value life, I value my own health and work on improving it, and thirdly, I very much look to the future. I have disciplined myself to work out a program for the next 15 years of my life, and that has me excited about the future. So the things that upset me today, however big they are, they're small things in the sort of landscape that I've got pictured for me for the next 15 years. And I think it's important that we put stakes in the ground for the future and we don't get too tied up on what might happen in any one day.
Oh, that's really excellent advice. Is there any closing comments you'd like to make?
Yeah, just as I said, just appreciate life itself. We all know of people who die suddenly, who become ill and get faced with long illnesses, which often lead to death. We're a very fragile unit, the human body, mind and physically. We've got to look after it, and we've got to appreciate the fact that we're here.
It's good advice. We've been talking with Jeff Kennett. He is the former Premier of Victoria and the Chairman of Beyond Blue, the National Depression Initiative. Thank you so much for coming on to Dad's on the Air.
Great pleasure, John. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll be back.
Drift to the beat. go so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Yes, I thought that was a fairly fascinating interview with Jeff Kennett. It actually brought to mind comments that were made earlier this year when I interviewed Rich Zubati, who's the author of What Men Know That Women Don't, and he actually commented that before you can be happy, you must be grateful. And I think that that did actually tie in with what Jeff Kennett was saying about waking up in the morning and basically being grateful for his life, which is a, he saw as an antidote to depression. But Rich Zubati actually saw that as a stepping stone in the other direction, away from depression and towards happiness. I found that most interesting, very compelling interview. In Australia, Caroline appears to be running a one-woman campaign against shared parenting, from what I can see. Has written yet another one of these articles of hers. Mother defiant on custody after falling foul of parenting laws. Caroline writes, a Melbourne mother defied a family court order to hand her toddler daughter to the child's father to live with him in Darwin. The woman, who cannot be named, had been instructed to hand over the girl after the court heard she had taken the child from Darwin, where the child was born, without the father's permission and against his will, and moved back to her home city. She said yesterday that she simply couldn't, and that's in quotation marks, hand over the child as ordered by the court. The case is the latest in a series of decisions that suggest shared parenting laws introduced by the Howard government in 2006 have made it difficult for women to relocate with their children after separation, and that women who interfere with a child's relationship with the father risk losing custody. Well, personally, I think that's just all fair enough. I mean, men, I can't relocate overseas. There was a recent case, we covered it in Dads on the Air, I think last week, I wasn't here, but of a man who couldn't go overseas because that it was deemed by the family court that he was denying his children the right to their father. So anyway, we'll go
more
on.
More likely they'll want to hunt him down for the child support, but anyway.
Yeah, make it more difficult. Anyway,
we'll get a private investigator onto that one.
Exactly. Caroline continues to write, the law requires family court judges and federal magistrates hearing family court matters to apply the presumption that a child's best interests are served by having a relationship with both parents after separation. Well, that, I think, is common sense. That's a position that we here at Dads on the Air have been trumpeting basically since we began. She goes on to write, mothers are expected to encourage a relationship between children and their fathers, except in cases of violence. Supporters say the law is working precisely as it should. I am a supporter. Critics say it is forcing, or critics, in other words, Caroline, say it is forcing breastfed babies into shared care arrangements and ties women to their ex-partners and their jobs in areas where they never intended to live long term. Well, sorry, girls. You know, when the family breaks down, it can't all go your way. Caroline goes on to write, the Shared Parenting Council of Australia said the court acted correctly because the mother had effectively abducted the child by unilaterally moving her to Melbourne. And imagine if it had been the father. They would have had all the signs everywhere saying, this man...
Emergency situation, here's a license plate number, arrest on site.
Of a man who's stolen a child. I mean, you know...
They'd be accused of child abduction.
They want equality or what? They want equality... They obviously not in this particular
matter.
Never
intended to live long term. Was quite prepared to get pregnant and start a family, which didn't work out, so therefore it's not long term. Okay.
Anyway, Caroline goes on to write, the court accepted that the mother had always been the primary carer of the child. It took 8 months maternity leave. She took 8 months maternity leave when the girl was born and now works 2 days a week. She and the father separated when the child was just 15 months old. Federal Magistrate Janet Terry said the mother had acted high-handedly in leaving without the father's permission. Well, absolutely. If the man had done it like we said, he would have been pilloried. He would have been all over the media. He was described in court documents as a devoted father. He offered to move out of the family home so the mother could live there with their daughter while a full-time care plan was worked out. He told the court he was happy for the child to live with the mother in Darwin, provided he had regular access and a meaningful life in her, a meaningful role in her life, which to me sounds like he was a reasonable man trying to do the right thing by his ex-wife and his daughter. I mean, so I don't know what Caroline's on about, but go, Caroline.
From the Men and Fathers Health Summit at Parliament House in Canberra. This is organised by the Dads for Kids Fatherhood Foundation. Warwick Marsh from the Dads for Kids said men's health needs urgent government and community action. It was a unanimous call of the summit that the government set up an interdepartmental agency to fund and coordinate the soon-to-be-announced men's health policy. The summit called on the government to introduce a positive men's health policy that recognises the needs and unique contributions that men make to society. The same policy must address the social deterrence of men's health and provide an action plan to address the many factors affecting men and fathers' health. And some of the points were men die 5 years earlier than women, Indigenous men die 20 years earlier than non-Indigenous men, men commit suicide at 4 times the rate of women, Indigenous men's suicide rate is 70% higher than non-Indigenous men. At almost every level of health statistics, men's health is far worse than women's, and Indigenous men die from diabetes at 500% the rate of non-Indigenous men. And Indigenous men suffer the poorest health in Australia. And to celebrate Men's Health Week, Dads for Kids Fatherhood Foundation has released Healthy Men, Healthy Families, Healthy Nation, which is a combined men's health policy proposals from all the different summit delegates. We're going to a short music break.
Tells us to keep
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
It started with a kiss. Looking boy, it started to hang around. That boy hurt me so bad, but I was happy 'cause you cried still. I couldn't help but notice that new distant look in your eyes. And then when you were 16,
cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
We're going to have Jermaine Greer here. She'll be talking about the future of men.
Now, the future of men, who needs them, eh? No. Like what scientists have done, especially the female ones. We're creating Frankensperm, don't you know? Men could lose their roles in the reproductive process. If only I could be around long enough to see it. Human sperm was created artificially in a laboratory last week. Scientists used stem cell technology to grow sperm in a groundbreaking experiment that offers hope of no more deadbeat dads in the society that we live in. Good riddance to men, I say. Biologist Kieran Yalala from Brillinton's Newcastle University, who carried out the experiment, is convinced the artificial sperm is capable of fertilizing my old dried-up eggs and creating offspring. Won't that be a wonderful thing for the world? Yes. Oh, they contain all 23 chromosomes, half the number of other human souls, but who needs them all?
So
and
this is
half a head and half a tail. What
so
more
they
do
don't
you
need?
Need
men at all. They can create sperm without men.
That's the hope, dearie. That's the hope. We can get rid of you. You've lasted you lot. Of course, we won't be able to produce female children.
A bit rough you calling us historical relics, isn't it?
More like dinosaurs, darling. You're going to go in the way of the dodo, as far as I'm concerned.
You don't think you're suffering the same fate, my dear?
Not if I can reproduce myself before I'm gone. Take a few of my skin cells, extract the nucleus, expose it to chemicals, turn back the clock and transform it into an embryonic stem cell. It can then be transformed into sperm. Still unclear whether it can fertilize an egg, but we'll get round to that part, don't you worry. So much for you, Homer Simpsons. You're Homo sapiens.
Don't you think there could be some social consequences to the elimination of men?
Look, if it was possible for a woman to make sperm from her skin and produce eggs to go on and make babies, then everybody else would be redundant too. As to it. Except the scientists who are helping her, of course. But you never know what's going to happen in science, do you, darling?
So what university was this?
Newcastle University in Britain. Never been there myself, darling, but I think I'll be booking a ticket next week.
It's research Cambridge going or Oxford or something, aren't you,
Dolph? I can't remember. I've probably been to them all. I don't know.
So can you tell us a little more about the whole project?
Well, they took stem cells from a male embryo. Well, we have to start experimenting on the worthier creatures that we experimented and tortured first. Heaven forbid that we get it wrong with a female embryo. stem cells from a male embryo, and we treat them with a special chemical to set them on the path towards becoming sperm. A few of the cells underwent the crucial step of meiosis, or cell division, followed by the growth into mobile sperm with heads and tails. Yes, well.
Then what happens?
Well, if it proves to be successful and shown to be safe in producing healthy offspring, then I think it could be exciting for the future with a manless world. And that's about it, darling.
That's the whole story?
Well, there's other things that we can do with these stem cells. We can turn them into many different types, such as hearts and muscles and brains, but don't need any of those, except you dinosaurs.
You just want to create a male-less world.
Well, who needs you?
I need me.
You need you? Well, it's a bit controversial yet. I mean, this work has to prove successful but until we do that.
But has
I'm still going to have to put up with you for a while yet.
So IVF, Australia Fertility Specialist Association Professor Peter Illingworth, said that 400 men every year in New South Wales could benefit from the process. How is that?
Because they're the sad sacks who can't produce good sperm, darling.
So they take some of their
DNA and reverse engineer it and give them sperm that their balls couldn't produce in the first place.
Oh, well, there you go. If it was proven to be successful and shown to be safe in producing healthy offspring, then I think it could be very exciting for the future, he said. But it could be a long time before artificial sperm is offered at IVF clinics or before men become completely redundant in the reproductive world. Firstly, the new process would need to jump through major ethical and legal hurdles. Never get rid of those lawyers. Do you think you could breed a world without lawyers?
Well, darling, if it's a world run by women, we won't need them, will we?
I don't know about
There'll
that.
There'll be no litigation. We'll sort it out over tea and scones.
Sort of loving, you know.
Loving, sort of starting loving.
And feeling your feelings. And
Absolutely. A conflict-free world. Nothing unethical about that.
If it was possible for a woman to make sperm from her skin and produce eggs to go on and make babies, then everybody else would be redundant too, except the scientists who are helping her, Professor Skeen said. But you never know what's going to happen in science. Quite an astonishing story, really.
I find it fascinating.
Right. Well, we'll just have a look at some other stories. We are having difficulty, as we said, with that press conference, which is unfortunate because we had hoped to play the whole thing. But there are a couple of other stories there.
Well, we like the one where, caught on camera, the mother told daughter to bash up her bully. At her wit's end and frustrated by her daughter's treatment at the hands of a bully, a young mother revealed yesterday that she suffered a brain snap when she egged her child on to bash her tormentor. The 30-year-old Newcastle woman yesterday pleaded guilty to inciting another to commit common assault after a physical fight between her daughter and a group of teenagers. During the fight, which was captured on a mobile phone as usual, police said the woman can be heard yelling out to her 14-year-old daughter, break her nose, as the girl fights another teenager. Speaking exclusively to the Daily Telegraph, which is exclusive, the woman, who cannot be named for legal reasons and never can, said she just snapped after watching her daughter get bullied at school by another girl for almost 6 months. Part of me thinks I had a brain snap after months and months of watching get picked on, she said. And I quote, never did I think it would turn into a full-on fight. In a written statement tendered to the Toronto local court, the woman said that on an almost weekly basis since the start of the year, her daughter had received text messages on her mobile phone challenging her to a fight. I have always said to her, just walk away. Walk away, she said. It got so bad a few months back that we took her around to another teenage girl's place and spoke to the parents, but they said, let them sort it out themselves, the mother said. And it goes on and on and on.
Children have been taken away. alone with my worst fears.
In distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Well, that's it for the 14th of July 2009. Next week we'll have Neil Humphreys on. He's become a overnight sensation with the book Having My Baby. So he's been a great unusual success, an Australian doing well, selling right around the world. We're also going to have a New Zealand chap who's taken the bank to court for the parodies of men in the advertising. It's a subsidiary of the National Australia Bank in New Zealand, and is using sort of symptom-like, Mr. Simpson-like parodies of men over there, and he's taken them to court over the issue. And hopefully we'll also have the bloke who was jailed for sending a birthday card to his daughter. All right, we'll be back next week. And don't forget, Dads on the Air .net.
We're Dads on the Air.